SNI Digital Innovations in Learning in association with the Hose Neurosurgery Lab in Baghdad, Iraq, are pleased to present the 21st SNI and SNI Digital Baghdad Neurosurgery Online Meeting held on January 20th, 2024. The meeting originator and coordinator is Samer Hose of the Universities of Baghdad and Cincinnati. The theme of this meeting is on spine diseases, complex spine, spinal cord, and nerve root diseases, successful management strategies outside high resource environments, how we do it. The moderator and discussant for this meeting is Nancy Epstein, who's the clinical professor of neurologic surgery at the School of Medicine at State University of New York at Stony Brook in New York, and also the editor-in-chief of Surgical Neurology International. The speaker is Dr. Ali Adnan Dalachi, who's the assistant professor in neurosurgery at the Al-Kindi College of Medicine at the University of Baghdad in Baghdad, Iraq. He will talk about complex spine, spinal cord, and nerve root diseases in a limited resource environment and will present two outstanding cases done with, in our opinion, superb thinking by a very compassionate and skilled neurosurgeon clinician. Case one is a patient with multiple myeloma who had a bone marrow transplantation at another center and outside the country, and an occurrence, reoccurrence of the disease in the thoracic spine with instability, had creative treatments, and after many months had a 12th nerve palsy that was symptomatic with no further progression of the disease. He'll talk about what he did and how he did this challenging case. In his second case, he'll talk about a patient with a symptomatic lower clavicle mass that led to the transoral removal of a lesion with a surprise diagnosis, followed by a cervical occipital fusion in a challenging environment. You'll find out what he did, how he did it, and why. And in this example, there's a message for all neurosurgeons, physicians, on providing the best one can do for the patient wherever you are.
One, thank you for inviting me to this amazing meeting. My honor to be between you to present my my cases and share my symbol, let's say my symbol experience in the spine surgery. As Dr. Hoss said, I'm as the professor, neurosurgeon from Al-Kindi Medical College, University of Baghdad, and work as a specialist in neurosurgeon in a neurosurgical teaching hospital in Baghdad. Our objects of my presentation to focus on complex spine surgery and the limitations that facing us in us a spine surgeon in Iraq. We will explain that through the presentation of two cases. My first case is a 55 years old female with history of hypertension and the SYMCAR disease on regular treatment, diagnosis as a case of multiple myeloma at the end of 2019. The first diagnosis as multiple myeloma by appearance of a sternal mass, which is operated on by the cardiovascular surgeon, and the histopathology this is a case of multiple myeloma. The patient received her regular chemotherapy by follow up the oncologist and did the bone marrow transplantation in Turkey, at 2020. During that period, the patient free from symptom and regular follow-up with the her oncologist at the 2 of July 2022. The patient developed severe back pain, and the MRI revealed there is a mass in L1. When I this is the mass as you see in the MRI in the L1 mass, I advise them to do surgery, fusion surgery with the decompression of the mass. But the family refused to do surgery, and they decide to receive a dose of radiotherapy or radiation for the back to relieve the pain and refuse surgery. At that time, the patient just having severe back pain, there is no weakness. After 3 weeks of the receiving radiotherapy, patient developed lower limb weakness of around grade 2 to 3, especially in the left side. Then come back to me and advise them again to do the surgery. This is the CT scan of the same patient with sagittal and coronal views. As you see, as you can see, this is the mass at the L1 destructive lesion involving the body of L1, and look for the bone density of the spine. The patient have osteoporosis or element of osteoporosis before because of the it is used for at least 2 year heavy dose of steroid of dexamethasone at each week. My plan was to do fusion from dorsolumbar fusion with posterior approach to the body to do corbectomy with insertion of biramesh or titanium cage. But the patient didn't have the price to pay a lot of money for instrumentation. That is why we omit the pyramesh and insist to do the dorso lumbar fusion. We use the cannulated screw because the bodies of the adjacent level are osteoporotic, but we have the cannulated screw, but the problem we don't have the special injector or filler of the bone cement to the cannulated screw. That is why we use a modified method by using a 10 gauge syringe with the needle of the infusion of the blood infusion set and introducing the bone cement inside this is the intraoperative picture of the fusion. As you can, this is the small amount of the optimum here by compress and do corbectomy from the posteriorly L1 with putting a small amount of the cement because of
Dr. Ali, we lost you. Can you share again the screen and unmute yourself? You are muted now. And can you share the screen again, please?
The thoracolumbar fusion that you're doing with the cannulated screws, you're talking about injecting polymethylmethacrylate, PMMA, into the screws, I assume?
Dr. Ali, you are still muted.
Now, my
Yeah,
sound is
that's
clear.
good.
Yes.
Yes, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
I use the spinal methyl acrylate, which is, as you know, it is have a low viscosity. Other it is unlike the standard bony cement, which is
Right.
that is used in cranioplasty on in orthopedic surgery. That is of low viscosity, to be injected in the cannulated screw. But actually, we don't have the specific set or the injector that
Right.
then would fill under the screen the cement correctly and come through the screw to the body.
So you're doing it freehand, basically, correct?
Yeah.
And what about the interbody injection? Are you using a piece of iliac autograft instead of an interbody device? What are you putting in once you do a
I
corpectomy?
put actually I put the bone cement also inside the body after I remove the soft part of the mass and do the partial corpectomy for the L1. I put as you can see this is a bony cement
Right.
for the patient.
Did you consider taking a piece of iliac autograft or bone or allograft bone or getting some kind of bone to put in there in addition to the cement itself?
I my plan was to put this autograft in a pyra mesh or titanium mesh. I inserted there, but we don't have, and the patient cannot pay the cement. And
Okay.
here to put the autograft alone, and the all
Wouldn't
the
hold.
spine are unstable. That is why I fear from displacement of the graft, especially all of these areas are diseased
Yes.
and evoked by the tumor. Actually, I fear from the displacement or dislodgement of the autograft from its place.
Right. When you put in the cannulated screws, did you get from any of those vertebral bodies, did you get a bone biopsy or bone sample to document whether they too were involved and it was not just osteoporosis?
Actually, I don't take the biopsy from these levels, but from the feeling segment of the bone.
Right.
There is
Okay.
no there is no I operate many cases of multiple myeloma when you introduce a body finder or the starter to the especially when you reach the body will some look like a bone marrow material comes from the hole, which is mean the body or the vertebra involved by the multiple myeloma. Actually, we don't have a frozen section biopsy. That is why we depend on the MRI picture and our experience to judge what this patient is or this vertebra involved or not.
And I have a question. When you did the bone marrow transplant, how much did you know about any disease, any place other than the sternum at that point?
At time, it is actually it is not my patient at that time, but
Right.
the family say to me after doing removal of the mother from the sternum and receive chemotherapy on, her oncologist advised them to go to Turkey to do a bone marrow transplantation, but this transplantation is failed because the patient after 1.5 year or around this period develop recurrence of the disease,
Right.
mean this is the transplant a failure.
Okay.
Okay.
That's
Our journey for with this patient is not ended at this level. After 3 to 4 days, the patient start to move her lower limb and the grade ranging from the 2 to 3 to 4 plus. At the end of or at time of removing the suturing, the patient can start to walk with full recovery of the movement. As well, there is a dramatic response to pain. And the pain is only at the site of the surgery, but not so severe as pre-operatively. This is a 3D reconstruction, CT scan. As you can see in this view, this CT after 3 months of surgery. The patient starts with the normal walking and to come to the hospital without wheelchair. And this is the bone track with the starting of the fusion at this level. And this the CT, because I don't have the previous picture of the patient. This is the CT scan of the thoracic cage showing the previous mass in the sternum. That is why I put this picture here, and this is the constrict. After that, it is about less than 1 year. At the 16th of May, 2023, patient developed dysphagia and severe headache, especially at night. We start our new workup. Where during examination, actually the patient don't have a true dysphagia, but have a mild difficulty in the speaking, in the speech. During the neurological assessment, all the neurological assessment are normal, apart from there is a deviation of the mouth to the right side, which is mean there is an hypoglossal nerve palsy, and there is no papilledema. Mean I think about the skull metastasis because the patient had severe headache without back pain. This is the mean there is no sign of raised intracranial pressure. This is the MRI of this patient. Actually, I don't have the many section of the MRI, but the radiologist said in or wrote in his report there is a small bony lesion near the foramen magnum. There is a two lesion, sorry, the first of it near the foramen magnum and the second one near the frontal. I have the picture of the frontal. This is caused the severe headache of the patient. This is a lytic lesion of the skull. And the another one in the base of the skull, that is why patient develop hypoglossal nerve palsy. And during examination, after 1 month, during examination of the patient have a floating of of the this is the MRI of the cervical. All things are good, and this is the lumbosacral spine, also is good. But I sent her to do X-ray for the back. Although the patient don't have a back pain and there is no weakness, but when I examine my previous scar or the previous wound, there is a floating of the rod of you, as you can see here. This is mean the net are the net are outside the rod with displacement of the rod. This complication because my cannulated screw set is an old set first, and the second we don't have the final titer of the net. That is why we use the same screw drive to lock the screw. We did it for her and a revision surgery, and put the screws. I put the net in its side, and the patient get well after receiving after doing the revision surgery and radiotherapy, not the for the spine, radiotherapy for the new lesion of the skull. Patient get well, improve in the headache, but still having deviation of the mouth. From that period till now, the patient is free of symptom relating to her previous spine surgery.
It's deviation of the tongue or
yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
Deviation of the tongue because of the right hypoglossal nerve involvement of the second mass, or that involves the base of the skull.
Is the patient getting any immunotherapy, chemotherapy, any other follow-up?
Yeah, it is on, yes. And during this long journey, the patient stopped the chemotherapy only 2 weeks of surgery. That is all. After we remove the suture, I refer her back to her oncologist and continue on the same regime of the chemotherapy and use of dexamethasone and the other adjuvant therapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The main follow-up of this patient from her oncologist, that is about 1 to 2 visits per month to her oncologist. They referred her to me in about every 3 to 4 months,
right,
when the patient developed complication related to the CNS.
Right.
Okay. Let us go to the second case. It's
mm-hmm.
also female of 50 years old with a chronic history of cervical pain at 2nd of October 2023, become having a severe cervical pain. At the 10th of October, as family said, patient developed an inability to hold her head. At the 20th October of 2023, patient unable to stand and work. At this period, I don't see the patient. I took this information from the family. At that time, patient do cervical MRI and having a C2 mass. Also, I don't have the picture of this, or MRI or radiology of this picture. Also, the patient at that period this is the do two investigation add in addition to CT and MRI of the cervical, do PET scan and serum protein electrophoresis, because initially a time of that period when see a medical advice from the oncologist and appear there is a mass in the G2, they think about the metastasis or multiple myeloma. But the PET scan is normal apart from there is a lesion of the C2, the same result of MRI and CT. And protein electrophoresis, actually it is not a specific. There is no result, mean the patient may didn't have a multiple myeloma. After I received the patient in the beginning of the November of the previous year. I start a new workup for the patient. I did a new MRI and CT scan. As you can see, this is the lesion of the C2 body with partial involvement of the dense. Also, this is a T1 sagittal MRI, and this is the T2 sagittal MRI. Look for this with Gado. This a partially or weakly enhanced lesion, mainly involved the body with minimal pressure of the cord. At that time, the patient, as I said, unable to hold her head because of the severity of the pain, and unable to walk with upper limb and lower limb about grade 3 weakness. This is a nice picture of the CT scan of this patient. As you can see in this picture, this is a coronal view. This is a distractive lesion or expansile, sorry, it's expansile bony lesion involving the C2 body and this sagittal. This is the sagittal, and this is the coronal. This is the coronal view, and this view is the 3D reconstruction of the spine. At this point, my plan was to do a transoral approach to address the mass and decompress the mass and taking biopsy, because the previous investigation was not conclusive about the diagnosis of the patient. And the same time, after doing the transoral approach, I will do, this is my plan, to do craniocervical fusion for this patient. That is why I prepared this patient for the surgery. I do for her, as you know, in the craniocervical fusion, it is important to do the CT angiography for the blood vessel. Posteriorly, this is the posterior view, to see the real course of the vertebral artery in relation to the cranium, so C1, C2, and C3, and C3 complex, and to see any variation of this course, because it is dangerous during dissection to prevent injury to the vertebral artery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is the lateral view. From this view, I address the anterior part also, because I plan to do transoral approach for this patient. And there is no, as you can see, there is no an apparent force of the or the vertebral artery. This is make us more quiet to do the surgery, because we don't have We have only CR. We don't have a navigator, intraoperative navigator, to localize the lesion.
With the contrast scan that you had, or the CTA, didn't you see a blush in that C2 lesion? And could you embolize it or think about doing something like that?
We actually in our hospital, we don't have an embolization catheterization for when we suspect a vascular lesion. We don't have. We have only two, I think, two centers. It is a private center for embolization, and this the surgery in governmental hospital, and the patient is very poor. They can't pay even the price of this cruise. Okay. I think about the embolization very operatively, but I didn't talk this subject to I don't I sorry I didn't discuss this subject with the family, because I know when I discuss the price of the craniocervical fusion for the family, they say to me, which is about in Iraq, a craniocervical plate and screws, occipital plate and the craniocervical fusion, it is range from 2000 to $2,050. The patient, the family said to me, we don't have even $300. Please make your connections to solve our problem. That is why I don't talk with them about the catheterization, because at that time I think about how can I make these screws available. Okay. Okay. That is why we do this is the city NGO. I call my colleagues, because my hospital, we don't have an ENT surgeon. I call my colleague in other hospital to do with me an transoral approach for the C1. This is an ENT surgeon, but not familiar to use the microscope. That is why we choose the endoscopic transoral approach, because it's an ENT surgeon and familiar with the use of the endoscopy. Again, we don't have the special instrument like the Degman retractor, the pharyngeal retractor. That is why we use the ordinary retractor of the tonsillectomy. And we use for the pharyngeal retractor, I use the Casper retractor of the ACDF.
With the smooth blades, right?
Yeah. I use the blade of the longest one. The longest one blade for this patient. This is an intraoperative picture. We start to... this is the endotracheal tube. This is the beginning of the end of the lung. This is the posterior pharyngeal wall, and we start to dissect the rectusculi muscle, and after drilling. As you can see, this is a very bloody field. During first intraoperative finding, a lot of think about this is a case of an aneurysmal bone cyst, because it's not a texture of the multiple myeloma, and even not a texture of metastasis, bleeding from anywhere of the body. As you can see in this mini video, this is after doing drilling of the C1. The bleeding is very copious from the inner side of the C2. We do a little bit more than a partial corbectomy of the C2. Besides, we removed the dents and the post C1 arch. This is at the end of the first step of the surgery. I mean the endoscopic transoral. This is the blade of the Kaspersky of the ACDF. Make it as a pharyngeal retractor. This is after removal of the part. This is the part of posterior longitudinal ligament. We exposed here, and we leave the partial of the bone laterally. After we go ahead to the second part of the surgery. During the second part of the show, we open the patient in the standard trans posterior approach. We don't, as I mentioned previously, we don't have the ideal linked screw for this level. We only have the long, as you know. In subaxial lateral mass, we need screw length is a range from the 12 to 16 millimeter. The available in our hospital, we have all screw of lateral mass, but all of them are too long. It is range from the 25 to 28 millimeter, which is too long to introduce in the lateral mass of the subaxial. That is why I use the rod cutter and cut, as you can see in this view, I cut the long rod to make them shortly after I measure the depth by the.
So they're no longer self-tapping screws, so you have to tap it before you put the screws in, correct?
Yeah.
What about the occipital screws? Because that's even more tricky.
Suboccipital screws. Actually, we have the length, the range from the 8 to 10 mm. I use the available screw. Some of the screws go out. Outside the skull, but the patient will. There is no CSF leakage. There is no bleeding. That is why we put the craniocervical effusion. This is our obstacle because we don't have the ideal length of the lateral mass. We strictly follow up this patient during first week because the patient on NG. Because of the pharyngeal wound, and monitor the patient if may develop at any time pharyngeal swelling and stridor, and may need the tracheostomy.
Are you also worried here? I'm looking at your lateral view. You've kept the posterior aspect of C1, the arch. Are you worried that that's going to prevent the cord from moving dorsally within the dural sac, and that might be a site of repeated compression?
I talk partially the anterior arch of the C1, you mean?
No, the posterior arch of C1, I see, is still intact.
No, I don't. I don't take it. I don't do laminectomy of such patient because. In the CT and MRI, the C2 posterior part of the C2 that is not involved, Add to that, I take multiple biopsy from the lamina, and the lamina was very strong, looked to be not diseased. That is why I decided to leave it at its posture to make the fusion better.
Okay.
Okay. After 1 week, we removed the NG and the patient start to walking. In the second day, the patient only have a small or simple, sorry, simple cervical pain at time of surgery. The histopathology, as you see, the aneurysmal bone cyst, there is no malignancy. Actually, I said to the patient, I advised them to go to the oncologist. Although there is, as you know, the aneurysmal bone cyst are a benign lesion, but many articles said that some doses of radiotherapy may prevent recurrence or stop the progression and decrease the vascularity. That is why I referred my patient to the oncologist to receive some doses that are arranged by radiotherapist to prevent progression of the disease. Till now, the patient well, stand walking with very minimal cervical pain.
Do you have a post-operative MRI scan?
Till now, no, because I operate this patient at the end of I operate the patient at the end of November, and the after taking the biopsy, the patient sent to the oncologist. I said to them I will repeat the MRI after 3 months.
Okay.
Yeah. I will inform you as the time permit for me to send the new MRI patient on a CT scan. My message, in the spine surgery, the limitation of this instrumentation are a lot. You can modify your instrumentation to help your patient, but you should be in the safe side. Always be safe. Always be safe during modifying your instrumentation. And the second message, complex spine surgery, always always the patient having a long journey. That is why you should be meticulous to follow up the patient, and the patient may develop complication at any time, and many of the complications may not related to the site of the surgery itself. Of the first case, the complication or the new development of the disease related to the cranium. And thank you for your kind listening. And if there is any question, I'm ready. Thank you for kind listening.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Ali. Thank you for this nice presentation, this nice cases. I just want to add something before asking the comment from the professors. First, the neurosurgical center, it's called the Neurosurgery Teaching Hospital, which is in the center of Baghdad. It's the capital of Iraq. And it's the first and the main neurosurgery center all over the country, and the main center for trauma. This center has a specific setting. It's a tertiary center for neurosurgery because this is related to what Dr. Ali described about there is no ENT surgeon, and this seems odd, but Our main center is a tertiary center for neurosurgery, contained only neurosurgery service, basically like 90% and 10% maybe neurology, and that's it. And it's a separated hospital, separated location. So it's very nice for neurosurgeon. It's all neurosurgery hospital, but at the same time, it's not easy to connect with other specialties. That's a peculiar about this location as described by Dr. Ali. And the second point is, as far as my experience, embolization of this location is needs some experience. And I don't think this experience available yet in Iraq because it's near the skull base, can, if done randomly, like preoperative or embolization, can cause easily lower cranial nerve palsy or major complication. And at the same time, estimated cost will be $4,000 to $5,000, will be like double or triple the size of screws, for example, just to make those more clear. And yeah, the mic is yours, Professor Nancy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that these are some very unique, very complicated cases that were operated on with finesse and obviously great care, and studies were obtained preoperatively to adequately plan what the postoperative status would be. The outcomes seem to have been good for the cases that were presented. We all know that there are cases that any of us have ever had that may not have come out as well. I think it emphasizes that patient workup preoperatively is critical. We've spoken about MR. We've spoken about x-rays, especially, I think, cervical and lumbar. I think most spine cases, at least here in the States, a lot of them deserve to have CAT scans, although many of our surgeons don't get the CAT scans, and then they get some real surprises as a result of not having done those CAT scans. Specifically in the neck, you may end up with cervical ossification of the posterior longitudinal ligament and a quadriplegic patient because you went to do an ACDF that you thought was simple and the whole thing was ossified, and before you knew it, you were in the middle of the spinal cord. Resource utilization is a problem. Whether or not patients have the finances to do the studies that you need. It's an interesting question because I think in the States, sometimes the patients who can't afford it may be getting the safer operations with less instrumentation and fewer complications because they're getting a simpler operation. Whereas in other instances, if there's more money to be gained by putting in all kinds of instrumentation, at least in the States, more money is gained by the hospital, more money is gained by the surgeon. So it's not always what is best for the patient, where I think all of our interests should be focused on what does the patient need, what is best for that individual patient. And I think that that's what has been discussed today and very nicely addressed. Jim, any thoughts about that?
Ali, yes, thanks, Nancy. Ali, that is just an outstanding job. I agree totally with Nancy. You've used all the resources at your disposal very intelligently. You've been very safe and very cautious, very thoughtful. That's outstanding anywhere in the world to handle an extremely complicated problem. The way you did it just a terrific job. Hadi, this is another example of both of these people, superior doctors and physicians in Iraq, where people wouldn't think that this would happen. These are just superb results, superb thinking. Your influence is still shown. Ali, that's just a terrific job.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, my prophet. Thank you.
So, Samir, where do we go from here?
We can have a few comments maybe two comments. And then either if you want to share some slides or We can go just to the Q&A at the end if any student or resident or surgeon have general
I think we should do some Q&A. And Samir, I think the other thing to think about is, you know, do we have follow-up sessions every month, every few months, where cases can be presented even before they're done to get different opinions as to what recommendations might be? And that's how some of these spine conferences could be used. I mean, what, Ali, Dr. Ali, what do you think? How could you use a conference like this?
Yeah. It's very helpful to see your, to hear your advice. And my opinion to make a follow-up meeting for this to give you a feedback of these cases with the new series of investigation like CAT scan or MRI to see what happened for this patient during follow-up. And hearing from you, the advice is what to do.
Right.
Well, Ali, your accomplishment and that of Yasser really fill my heart. It's really tremendous. And I remember that the saying said that leaps in our time or in the past were just steps. But the steps now, your steps are leaps. So your progress is so fast, so wonderful. So matching the international standard makes us proud of you, of your achievements, you and Yasser and your colleagues, including Samer, of course.
Thank you, sir. You and Dr. Saad and Dr. Samir put the line of us, and we follow these lines. And make the work upgrading. This is from your life.
What's your effort?
Life.
Tremendous effort and achievements, really.
Thank you, sir.
Samir, what are your feelings? I mean, I know you're a vascular and an endovascularist and all of that kind of stuff, but just in terms of comments of, you know, where neurosurgery is in Iraq. It's interesting to me that you have a hospital that's 90% neurosurgery, but neurosurgery does need not only neurologists, but other specialists around because sometimes other complications arise. What am I referring to? You do an instrumented lumbar procedure. I don't know if you have XLIFs, extreme lateral interbody fusions, but those are procedures in the States, or even just a TLIF or a pedicle screw in the lumbar spine. If you have a perforation of an iliac vessel, who's going to help you repair this? Do you just have your neurosurgical colleagues who don't know how to repair it?
we usually use a good friend who's, for example, vascular or thoracic, if you need additional specialty, so you use your personal connections to have a friend spend a full day for free in a governmental hospital just in case you need him. This is usually used always in the cervical or transoral approach or transsphenoidal sometimes with the initial experiences. Yeah, with the initial experiences for skull base, they use ENT a lot. Then with the experience, they don't need them. Mm-hmm. So it depends, even in urgent polytrauma cases. So we need to do the chest tube first, and then we start consulting cardiovascular center. So it's weird, but at the same time, I think it's very rare around the world to have a center with a 24-hour emergency only neurosurgery. So for resident, I don't think this experience is comparable to spend the day in the emergency department receiving only neurosurgical cases. So it's very different from other emergencies. Yeah. And you can operate the extradural hematoma from door to OR in 10 minutes from it's the same corridor for emergency, then CT scan, then OR. So the setting is for real emergencies more. And yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, as you say, the connection with the other specialty is definitely a limitation.
Yes, Samir, but if you take the main teaching hospital for the medical school, what the neurosurgical department there is in a major hospital where all the specialties are there. So
Yeah.
apart from these neurosurgical centers, pure neurosurgical centers, there is this center, which is the middle of a teaching hospital where all the specialties are available. You can call anyone if there is any emergency there during your surgery.
Yeah.
I have one question for Dr. Ali. When you did the anterior transoral approach, what was the time period between doing the anterior and the posterior surgery? And is there a part of you that would have liked to have obtained an MRI scan to make sure you did not have a significant anterior hematoma before you turn the patient over to do the posterior surgery?
Actually, we don't have, we didn't have this facility. I do, the surgery started about 10 a.m. at morning. The end of transoral surgery, it is about, as I remember, 1:30 p.m. Then I took X-ray to see the pharynx and the what the if there is no swelling to proceed to the second procedure. At the same time, when we see there is no swelling and the patient are vitally stable, and we wait at least for half an hour before the closure of the mucosa and the rectus coli, and they said I said to the anesthetist to raise the blood pressure, that the blood pressure a little bit more than the normal initial blood pressure when the patient before induction. After I put Surgisil and some of bone wax and wait at least for half an hour, because I don't this facility to go the patient with the tube to the MR and go back to the surgery. When I make sure at least by the naked eye, there is no obvious bleeding. We close the muscle and close the mucosa. And as I said, we take the X-ray. There is no pharyngeal swelling. We immediately we change the position of the patient after cleaning all my sets. Get rid about outside the theater, because it's almost contaminated from the mouth, and we'll use instrumentation for posterior. We all of the of all of us go to hand washing again to be more sterilized, and I told to anesthetist to give another dose of antibiotic for such patient to prevent infection, because our problem and disaster complication of such long surgery with combined anterior and posterior approach at the same time, the infection. And the infection here is very disastrous.
Right.
Yes,
right.
sir.
Well, if I can make a comment, there's a trend, and I see it in our country, I'm not sure about others, where the young neurosurgery residents believe that they should do as many cases as they can, so that when they go out and are more experienced neurosurgeons, they'll have all that knowledge behind them. But there's no way you can do all the cases you need to do just like the case you just exposed or you just showed us, that you can prepare for. And the first group of surgeons I'm talking about are mechanical neurosurgeons. They're mechanics. What you've shown is what, to me, I admire, which is a thinking neurosurgeon. You're thinking about what to do. You're waiting for to solve Nancy's problem of hematoma. You're waiting. You're doing all the things you do you can do to make it what you said safe. And I think the message to the young people watching this is, you're never going to do all the cases you're going to see in life. And I'm sure, Ali, this if you saw one of these cases before, it would have been unusual. This is a very complicated, rare case. And the only way you can prepare for that is to learn the principles of neurosurgery and to be a good thinking neurosurgeon and not be interested in just mechanically getting the job done, because that would have failed. And I compliment you on that. And just an outstanding thinking process, outstanding execution of your plan.
Professor Khalili, do you have any other comments?
Not really, no. I'm just said what yeah. I feel. Thank you.
Yeah, I think Samir, you know, maybe it's the time to, you know, wrap it up, but then come to some kind of decision as to whether we would try this again with this, a similar format, and you choose other people to present cases, or, you know, Yasir and Dr. Ali to present cases again. It's up to you.
We are so grateful to Professor Epstein for her presence and comments and very important advices. Thank you so much, ma'am.
I mean, I was trying not to interrupt and throw people off. I was just trying to get questions answered as we go, but either format, I think, is perfectly fine.
You did a great job. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you. I think this is very eye-opening for both me and for Jim. I think Jim has been doing this with you for 20 other instances, especially with vascular, but I think, you know, what we learn about you, what we learn about spine, and probably the most important thing is what we learn about our fellow surgeons across the globe is probably the best information of all. You know, we're all interested in what's best for the patient, and or many of us are still interested in what's best for the patient and trying to figure out what to do next and how to do it better.
Yeah. Really appreciate it, Professor Epstein. I should ask the attendee participant if they have any comments, students, resident surgeons. This is the time to ask your question.
Are there any women medical students?
There is a lot.
Good.
they are dominant already.
Okay. Tell them that there's no reason that they could not go into neurosurgery. It's perfect. Women have very nice small fingers and good brain.
Yeah, for the medical student, for the medical school, yeah, I think the female are the more dominant. But mm-hmm. neurosurgery, it's growing. I think the percent of female per each year accepted for residency, it's already increasing. Growing. Yeah, we have already more than 10 female neurosurgeons. And I think with the next few years, this number will be duplicated at least.
By the way, the two cases, I present this two cases. My assistant are two females and two different females.
Yeah. And, okay.
And the good. Same, and the UCAN case and the another case, two different undergraduated neurosurgeon, female neurosurgeon.
Yeah, yeah. That's good.
Mostly have three female neurosurgeons. Wow. They compete their
votes. Excellent.
That's nice.
Well, Yasir, you and Ali just did a superb job. And the message you have is not only a message for people in the low to middle income countries, but it's also a lesson for people in high income countries of intelligent, creative people who are making the most use of what they have and doing an outstanding job. Both of you to be complimented.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, I think if we don't have any more questions, we can wrap up today, and we will discuss later with the speakers and with the moderators what's their potential opinion about the next steps. Okay.
Excellent.
No questions?
Thank you very much. I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thank
thank
you.
You.
Thank you, everyone,
very, very
for your
helpful.
time. Thank you, Dr. Yasser, Dr. Ali. Thank you, professors, and all the attendees.
Thank you.
See you again. Thank you. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed these presentations. The material in this program is for informational purposes and is not intended for use as a diagnosis or treatment of a health problem or as a substitute for consulting a licensed medical professional. Please fill out your evaluation of this video to obtain CME credit and to guide us in future programming. This recorded session is available free on snidigital.org. Send your questions or comments to Ausman@snidigital.org. This program was supported by the James I. and Carolyn R. Ausman Educational Foundation, owner of SNI and SNI Digital, and the Waymaster Corporation, producers of the leading gen television series, Silent Majority Speaks, Role Models, and the Medical News Network. Thank you very much. Thank you for watching. Thank you. Thank you.